Hello, Bitcoiners, freedom lovers, and everyone panicking about the price of Bitcoin. This is Zach, and you're listening to Explains on the Bitcoin Well podcast. I know the price of Bitcoin is all anyone is talking about right now, but I want to focus on what's going on with crypto exchanges. Just this morning, June 25th, Upbit halted deposits and withdrawals on one of their tokens. A few days before that, BitThumb froze Tyco transfers after a mainnet issue, And the Tyco story is the one that got me because I'd never even heard of this crypto. An attacker drained about $1.7 million from their bridge because somebody left a private signing key sitting in a public GitHub repo, the keys to the vault posted online for anyone to find. So June isn't even over and we've already racked up more than 20 crypto hacks. 20. And those are just the ones that made the news. Different chains, different excuses, but same ending every time. And now here's the key takeaway. Every one of those headlines, the freezes, the pauses, the temporary technical issues, they share one root cause. Somebody else was holding the coins. You see, not your keys, not your coins isn't just a slogan I repeat to fill airtime, although it is part of my contract that I say it in every episode. Thanks, Adam. It's a warning written in billions of dollars of evaporated wealth. So today's episode is perfectly aligned with that. We're answering the question every beginner whispers to themselves, can't I just leave my Bitcoin on the exchange? We'll walk through Mt. Gox to Bybit, unpack paper Bitcoin and rehypothecation, and show you why a withdrawal pause is a fire alarm to get your money in your own wallet. Questions, pushback, orange pill wins? Email me at z.adair@bitcoinwell.com. That's z.addair@bitcoinwell.com. Come on, guys, I want your emails. Now let's step out of the chaos of the news cycle and relax into some knowledge. Enjoy the show. Over the last few videos, we've covered the mechanics of self-custody. You know what keys are, you know how seed phrases work, and you know how to set up a hardware wallet and send your first transaction. But there's a persistent, dangerous voice in the back of every beginner's head that says, this seems like a lot of work. Can't I just leave my Bitcoin on the exchange? I mean, Coinbase has billions in backing. Binance processes trillions in volume. These are massive, legitimate companies. Surely my money is safe there, right? Well, today we're gonna answer that question directly and permanently. Not your keys, not your coins isn't just a catchy slogan that you hear me repeating over and over again. It's a warning written in the billions of dollars of evaporated wealth belonging to people who thought exactly what you're thinking right now. People who trusted massive, legitimate looking companies. People who thought size meant safety. Well, it doesn't. And by the end of this video, you'll understand exactly why. Let's start with the history, because the crypto industry has a dangerously short memory. Starting with 2014, Mt. Gox. At their peak, they handled 70% of all Bitcoin transactions on Earth. Considered untouchable, a foundational institution. Then 850,000 Bitcoin disappeared, bankrupt. Users spent years in Japanese court proceedings to recover pennies on the dollar. Fast forward to 2018, Coincheck. 530 million gone in a single hack. One of the largest exchange thefts at the time. Barely a footnote now. 2019, QuadragaX. 190 million in customer funds lost when the founder allegedly died as the only person who knew the keys. It was later revealed to be a massive Ponzi scheme running for years. The founder may not even be dead. 2022, FTX. You've all probably heard of this one. $8 billion in customer funds vaporized overnight. The CEO was on the cover of Forbes and Fortune. He was photographed with world leaders and regulators. He was considered the responsible face of crypto. He's now serving 25 years in federal prison. 2025, last year, Bybit, a $1.4 billion hack, the largest single theft in the history of cryptocurrency. Not a shadowy startup. Not a fly-by-night operation, a major established exchange used by millions of people gone in one attack. The hacker, later attributed to North Korea's Lazarus Group, didn't break through a firewall. They compromised a third-party signing interface and manipulated a transaction that the Bybit team thought they were approving legitimately. The exchange, surprisingly, survived, but $1.4 billion of customer funds did not. Different decades, different countries, different excuses, but the same outcome every time. The people who held their own keys were safe. The people who trusted in an exchange lost everything. But hacks are just one way this goes wrong. The problem is how exchanges actually work at a fundamental level. Here's the question nobody asks when they sign up for an exchange. What happens to your Bitcoin after you buy it? The honest answer? Almost certainly not what you think. When you click buy on a major exchange, you assume that real Bitcoin was just moved into your name. Often, and most likely, it wasn't. This is what's known as paper Bitcoin. Exchanges frequently sell what amounts to IOUs, entries in their internal database that represent a claim on Bitcoin they may or may not actually hold. If they hold 100 real Bitcoin but have sold 200 Bitcoin worth of claims to customers, they've inflated the supply in their own books. They're not a Bitcoin exchange at that point. They're a fractional reserve bank wearing a Bitcoin costume. Arguably worse than paper Bitcoin is a practice called rehypothecation. And it's what actually brought down FTX. Rehypothecation is when an exchange takes your Bitcoin and lends it out or uses it as collateral for their own trading operations, often without your knowledge or explicit consent. Your Bitcoin gets pledged to a hedge fund. That fund uses it as collateral for another position, and that position gets pledged somewhere else. The same Bitcoin is being used simultaneously by multiple parties, all of whom believe they own it or have a claim on it. When the market moves against any one of those positions, the whole chain collapses in an instant. This is what happened to FTX. Customer funds weren't just sitting in a vault. They were being actively deployed by Alameda Research, FTX's affiliated trading desk, to make speculative bets, essentially longing and shorting Bitcoin to try to make extra money for the exchanges. When those bets went wrong, there wasn't anything left. Your Bitcoin being used as a poker chip in someone else's game. That is the custodial model. After FTX collapsed, surviving exchanges rushed to publish what's called proof of reserves to reassure their users. It sounds serious, but it's largely meaningless. Proof of reserve shows what an exchange claims to hold in assets, but says nothing about their liabilities. I can show you a bank statement with $100,000 in it, but if I owe $200,000 to creditors, I'm insolvent. The asset number is real, but the picture it paints is a manipulative lie. An exchange can pass a proof of reserves audit in the morning and be bankrupt by the afternoon. We've literally seen this happen. Even if an exchange isn't acting maliciously, the structure of their business puts your Bitcoin at serious risk. The first structural problem is altcoin contagion. Platforms that list thousands of altcoins have an enormous attack surface. A bug in some obscure smart contract, a hack of a miner token, or the collapse of a speculative project can cascade into insolvency for the entire platform. You might hold only Bitcoin, but if the exchange goes down because Dogecoin collapsed, your Bitcoin is frozen with it. You're sharing a vault with assets you never chose and risks you never accepted. Closely related is stablecoin counterparty risk. Much of the liquidity on major exchanges isn't backed by real dollars. It's backed by stablecoins like USDT or USDC, private IOUs with varying degrees of transparency. We watched Terra Luna erase $40 billion in value in days. If the stablecoin underpinning an exchange's liquidity depegs, the whole structure collapses. Even if Bitcoin itself is working perfectly. There's also the less obvious issue of forced fork selection. When a network fork happens, custodial exchanges decide which version of the chain you get. They make that choice for you. You have no say, no sovereignty, and no recourse if you disagree. Now, custodial exchanges aren't just coin honeypots, they are data honeypots. Every trade, every login, every withdrawal is tied to your real-world identity through KYC verification. That data gets sold to chain analysis firms or handed to government agencies on request. Your complete financial history mapped and archived by parties that you've never met and can't hold accountable. This is surveillance and privacy erosion by design, not by accident. On the tax side, exchanges in the US and Canada now automatically issue tax forms, the 1099-DA in the US and the 10500-8 in Canada, directly to the government. Self-custody doesn't eliminate your tax obligations. You owe what you owe, but it does mean you are in control of your own records rather than having a third party report every move you make in real time. Now, the regulatory seize and freeze risk should concern everyone, regardless of their politics. In 2022, the Canadian government ordered exchanges to freeze the accounts of citizens who had donated to the Freedom Convoy protests. No trial, no due process, no warning. A single phone call from a regulator and people's savings were inaccessible overnight. This isn't a hypothetical risk. It happened, and it will happen again. Custodial exchanges are pressure points, and governments know exactly how to apply pressure to them. Finally, there's the social engineering attack, which is far more common than the Hollywood version of hacking.
Using an RX modulator, I might be able to conduct a mainframe cell direct and hack the uplink to the download.
What the hell does that mean?
Most people picture sophisticated criminals breaking through firewalls, but the reality is a SIM swap on your cell phone number, a reset of your exchange password, and a maximum withdrawal request. Bored teenagers have done this successfully. It works because the exchange is the single point of failure, and access to your phone number is often all it takes to get through the door. So how do you know when an exchange is about to go under? Well, there's one signal that's preceded every major exchange collapse in history, the withdrawal pause. Mt. Gox paused withdrawals weeks before bankruptcy. Celsius paused them due to extreme market conditions and never reopened. FTX throttled withdrawals before the final collapse. Every time the excuse sounded temporary and technical, and every time it was the last warning anyone got before the funds were gone. If your exchange slows or pauses withdrawals for any reason, treat it as a fire alarm, not a maintenance notice. By the time a pause becomes a full halt, the money's already gone. The people who get out first are the only ones who get out at all.
No! Get out now!
Sell everything!
Must save the Bitcoin!
Look at everything we've covered. Paper Bitcoin, rehypothecation, altcoin contagion, surveillance, regulatory freezes, social engineering attacks, withdrawal pauses. Notice what every single one of those has in common. They all exist because somebody else is holding your Bitcoin. The custodial model is the disease. Most exchanges try to manage the disease with insurance funds, PR teams, and audits. At Bitcoin Well, we don't manage it. We sidestep it entirely by refusing to hold your Bitcoin in the first place. We're not a safer custodian. A safer custodian is still a custodian, and every custodian eventually will fail. Bitcoin Well is a non-custodial bridge. When you buy Bitcoin from us, It goes straight to your wallet, not ours. We can't sell you paper Bitcoin because every purchase settles directly on chain. We can't rehypothecate your funds because we never touch them after the transaction. We can't be taken down by altcoin contagion because we are Bitcoin only. We can't pause your withdrawals because there is nothing to withdraw. The Bitcoin left the building the second you bought it. A government can't call us to freeze your funds because we don't have them. Mt. Gox couldn't have lost 850,000 Bitcoin if they hadn't been holding it in the first place. An exchange should be a bridge, not a vault. You walk over the bridge to get from your fiat bank account to your cold storage vault. You use it to move. You don't pitch a tent and live there. The moment you leave your Bitcoin sitting on an exchange, you've turned a bridge into a home, and you've handed the keys to someone else. Whether you use Bitcoin well or someone else, make sure that you hold your own keys. Secure your own vault. Now, in the next video, we're staying in threat territory because exchanges aren't the only danger. The broader Bitcoin and crypto space is full of sophisticated, well-funded scams specifically designed to separate newcomers from their money. Fake giveaways, impersonation attacks, romance scams that run for months before the ask ever comes, rug pulls dressed up as legitimate projects. I mean, that's most of crypto. These aren't clumsy operations run by amateurs. They're engineered to exploit the exact combination of excitement and inexperience that every new Bitcoin holder goes through. If you've made it this far in the series, you're exactly the kind of person these scams are designed to target next. Make sure you like and subscribe if you like this content and so you don't miss the next video. I'll see you there.